coming in as Loeb. Milledyke centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get after it. It is Thursday, April 10th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Wes from Post Media. We're here at our Groundworks downtown studio. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Text line's open for you this hour at 960-960. We'd love to hear from you later on this hour. Our goalie guru, Kevin Woodley. But right now, Wes, first of all, hello. How are we? Doing well?
You know, Pat, I appreciate you asking. You did ask me that an hour ago, and I declined to comment as I was in dead last in my master's pool.
Oh, are you doing better now?
I am second last, so I'm climbing.
Climbing the rankings.
Climbing. Yeah, so I'm doing great.
You don't wave no white flag either. That's what I've always known about you. So we're not lying. Like, it's not hyperbole, it's not exaggeration when we say that Wednesday night gut punch for the Flames. I mean, that was an opportunity for them to gain two huge points and sweep California and come back home with some momentum for a huge game against Minnesota on Friday night. Like, that was an absolute gut punch. They should have won. They were up 3-1. You know, were they due for a team pulling one out of the fire against them? Yeah, probably. Just law of this is a very fair league, and I do find that it does kind of correct itself over the course of stretches of time. You know, there was a stretch there when the Flames weren't getting results that they deserved. There were a couple of games where they probably deserved better and they didn't get them. And then more recently, there's been some where they've deserved worse and they've been able to pull it out of the fire themselves. So, you know, like, they were probably due for one, but that doesn't matter because that still is an absolute kick in the gut. So the reality is this. Things didn't get that much worse for the Flames with the loss than they were going in. They lost a point, and that's bad. They lost runway, and you need more runway. You would like more runway anyway if you're the Flames. And what it really did, it was a missed opportunity, because with St. Louis losing their game in regulation, the Flames could have made it that much more probable, or that much more in reach, had they been able to close out those 2 points. But they're kind of right around the same spot when it comes to their playoff spots, but it didn't sound that way in the locker room. Let me just play you this. This is just a combination of Michael Backlund and Mackenzie Weegar. They were the two players who spoke postgame on Wednesday night. You know, this sounded, and granted, this was 20 minutes after the loss, but this was the captain and one of the other leaders, and you can tell in the tone that one was an absolute kick in the teeth.
It's hard. It's tough. We're up 3-1, 5 minutes left, and we lose the game. It's a tough one as well.
Other than the power play, everything was good. You know, that's when leadership and everybody has to step up and shut that game down. Unfortunately, it's going to cost us big time.
Until things are, you know, done, or we're in, or rather, we're going to battle to the end.
Yeah, obviously, it's tough right now, obviously, extended, so it's a tough one to think about, but we jump back on the bird and get to Calgary. I'm sure, you know, we'll talk about some scenarios and what can happen and whatnot. But got a big game coming up here on Friday, so you know, we need everybody to show up.
And honestly, that's again, little Backlund Weegar remix.
That was like, have you ever thought about DJing?
Let me think about it. Could you come up with a name for me? Come up with a name for me. And then I'll,
you know,
think about DJing.
The after last night, I'm not sure DJ Power Play would have the sort of appeal that you're looking for.
Fair point. So I do need a new DJ name. That's quite funny. Look, and I'm actually I'm glad that that was the mood. Like that sounded and looked like about as defeated and dejected a Michael Backlund and Mackenzie Weegar as we've seen at any point this year. And honestly, good. It should. Because that was a choke job. That was an unacceptable loss. They'd be the first to tell you that. But the fact that that loss is hitting as hard as it is, while the situation didn't change as drastically as it could have, I don't know. I guess it's good that the gravity is weighing on them as much as it is, because I think that that just leads to them playing the type of desperate hockey they'll need to play on Friday to truly keep their season alive. So
if you heard anything different, it would have been alarming.
It would have been definitely alarming, yeah, if it was like, oh, well, we got the point. That was a gut punch, and it should have been a gut punch.
You go back to the overtime loss at home, and Michael Backlund said after, well, that's still a huge point for us. If they had said that last night, we would have been having a much different conversation today.
The optics still hard to swallow, but here's what the playoff race kind of looks like now. Maybe let's dig in on the different scenarios or the different paths the Flames have to take between now and the end of the regular season, which is exactly 1 week away. 1 week from this Thursday, the Flames will be getting set for game 82 at Crypto.com Arena in Los Angeles. Minnesota wins. They did their best not to, but Minnesota wins. St. Louis loses, and that's why, because the Blues lost, it's why the things didn't swing as drastically as they could have. Playoff odds over at MoneyPuck look like this. Minnesota up to 96.4%. St. Louis down to 94.2%. Calgary right around the same. I think they went from 9.8 to 9.4 with the results on Wednesday night. So 9.4 for Calgary over at MoneyPuck, each of Minnesota and St. Louis up over 94%. Slightly different at Hockey Reference. Minnesota still at 96%. St. Louis a little lower at 92.7%. And that leaves the exposure of Calgary at 11.3%. So 9.4, 11.3, those are the percentage odds at MoneyPuck and Hockey Reference for the Flames to make it with a week to go.
I want to just make sure I heard that right. St. Louis, despite having one less game and the same number of points, Hockey Reference has with a better chance of making the playoffs? Higher probability?
Than Minnesota?
Yeah.
No, they've got Minnesota both at 96.4 and okay. 96. Yeah.
Okay.
So both, same order, Minnesota, St. Louis, Calgary.
My bad.
Percentage is
My
slightly
bad. I
different.
Did hear you wrong.
Yeah. Or maybe I said it wrong. There's just as good a chance I said it wrong.
No, I doubt that.
I don't.
Well,
I made enough mistakes on it last night anyway, so it could very well be.
There's too much math this time of year, is there not? The reality, you're absolutely right. The reality is that because the Edmonton Oilers did the Flames a favor and beat the Blues in regulation, that meltdown in Anaheim didn't have the same sort of, it wasn't the same sort of hit to their playoff hopes percentage-wise as it could have been. I just think,
you know what it wasn't, though? It wasn't the boost that it could have been.
Absolutely.
And that might be the worst part, because at this time of year, with the runway running out, you need to make your odds better. As a 9.4% with four games to go feels more dire than 9.8% with five games to go, because you got that much less runway. But because I think had the other results gone the same way and Calgary finds a way to win that game, regulation or overtime, I think we're talking about the Flames closer to 15, 16, 17% to make it, but they do choke away the point and are unable to do that.
And also, the fact that it really should have been a regulation victory, which as we hone in on, okay, well, what scenarios could get them into the playoffs? What would it take? One of the things that the Flames are going to need to do is rack up regulation wins.
Which has not been their specialty.
Which has not been their specialty. Yeah. And last night, they should have been 4 minutes. Well, they were 4 minutes from a regulation victory. It should have been locked down
at
from
least,
there.
Or at least if the Ducks are going to tie it, make them tie it with the net empty.
Yeah.
Like, make that the San Jose finish where the Sharks had some zone time and Will Smith had the great opportunity and then fans on it and the self clears and game over. Like, have it go that way. Or have it go how San Jose was able to force overtime on Wednesday in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Not 8 seconds on the ensuing faceoff with way too soft a zone entry.
Yeah. I mean, the odds only could have gotten worse if they somehow managed to lose in regulation.
Yes.
And there were some nervous moments, I think, there. But the point stands that the Flames are still in it mathematically, and yet at some point you don't get to clip along at 9% very long.
Yeah.
You either have to drastically impact that, or as you and I discussed earlier today, you know, with a loss tomorrow to Minnesota, they could potentially be facing elimination on Saturday.
Well, let's go through the different scenarios, because there are three teams that the Flames can mathematically still catch in this playoff conversation. The first is Edmonton, but really, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So we won't spend a whole lot of time on this.
We could probably skip that one.
Basically, if the Oilers get a single point in their final four games, or if the Flames lose in any fashion in their final four games, Calgary won't be able to catch the Oilers. So I think Edmonton's out of reach. But mathematically, Edmonton remains in reach, but that's not going to happen. So let's focus in on the two that are very, or not very likely, but the two that are most likely, much more likely than the Oilers, and that's Minnesota and St. Louis. Minnesota, the situation is this. If the Wild win in any fashion on Friday night at the Dome, Calgary will no longer be able to catch them. Because Calgary's elimination number is 3 points, any win by Minnesota would be 2 points gained by them and at least 1 point lost by the Flames, which would equal three, which would mean Calgary can no longer catch Minnesota. They do not have a tiebreaker on the Wild. They're guaranteed to lose the tiebreaker to Minnesota. So any loss against the Wild will eliminate them, which means Friday's game is massive because it's going to be a clinching night for Minnesota. If they win, they clinch. They get an X beside their name. And so you'd expect a pretty desperate effort from Minnesota. And for the Flames, you know, that's one more team that they won't be able to catch. You
right.
lose on Minnesota, that puts X's beside two teams the same night.
Do you want to swerve for a second before we get to the other team they can catch? Because I do think a lot of people don't maybe pay attention throughout the year, because why would you, to the tiebreaker scenario? When you say that they can't catch Minnesota in the tiebreakers, would you quickly, you're way better at this than I'll ever be, would you quickly explain the tiebreaker just for those who don't fully know how the NHL solves these deadlocks?
For sure. So the tiebreaking system is this. They have changed this a few times over the last decade, but the tiebreaker in 2025 is this. First tiebreaker, if a team is tied in points at the end of the regular season, is regulation wins. So that's the regulation wins column. Right now, Minnesota has 33 regulation wins, which means they're uncatchable. St. Louis has 31 regulation wins, which means they are catchable in that category. And the Flames have 28 regulation wins. So regulation wins is the first one. If you are still tied there, so if the Flames were to finish in a tie in regulation wins, the next tie-breaking column is regulation overtime wins, so any wins minus the shootout, and the Flames cannot catch the Blues or the Wild in that category. Minnesota's got 40 regulation overtime wins. St. Louis has 39. So if the Flames are tied in points with Minnesota, no way they win the tiebreaker. If they're tied in points with St. Louis, still a slight chance they could win the tiebreaker in regulation wins, but no chance they could do it in regulation overtime wins. Essentially, the Flames will have to finish ahead of both Minnesota and St. Louis. Guaranteed Minnesota, most likely St. Louis, they'll have to finish ahead of in points, which means a 5-point deficit is actually 6 on Minnesota and is likely 6 on St. Louis. Is that a decent enough explanation?
Yeah, and it's what makes it, like, the Flames have put themselves now in a predicament where even just winning the last four games might not be good. Like, you might need to win all four in regulation. Overtime is not going to be your friend at this point. And so to have any chance, and it's not guaranteed that it would come down to a tiebreaker, but if they're going to have a chance, they really, really need to rack up regulation victories. Yeah. Let's hit on St. Louis. It's the most likely.
And even then, it's not the most likely.
I mean, you need to really, really have your fingers crossed for the Seattle Kraken and Utah Hockey Club.
If the Flames lose in any form on Friday, St. Louis will have the opportunity to eliminate Calgary on Saturday. The Blues don't play again after their loss in Edmonton. They don't play again until Saturday night in Seattle. So that is the next game for St. Louis. A win by the Flames will keep them alive in the conversation going into Saturday. So the Flames winning on Friday means that they will live to fight and still be playing meaningful hockey on Sunday. A loss means that it's fully out of their hands going into Saturday. So it is essentially a must-win game. It's not technically a must-win game because the Flames cannot be eliminated on Friday, but essentially, because a loss on Friday would mean the Flames don't get a regulation win, they will no longer be able to pass St. Louis in that category, and thus any 2 points gained by the Blues on Saturday would be enough to do it. So the Blues are in Seattle at 8 o'clock on Saturday, and if you're the Flames, you want to make it so that that game, that you put a little pressure on the Blues, and it's like feels a little bit more like a must-win for them.
Yeah.
And you do that by beating Minnesota on Friday. And by beating Minnesota, specifically if you can do it in regulation, by beating Minnesota, you also put a little bit more pressure on them and make it so that in your final three games, you could see the potential of reeling either team in. And so Minnesota plays Friday and Saturday. They play the Canucks on Saturday, and they play the Flames on Friday. Beat the Wild on Friday, and then see where you go from there. That's basically what it comes down to. Your season is essentially on the line against the Wild on Friday night.
If you could and yes, absolutely. While it's not technically an elimination game, it's won or done for the Calgary Flames. Like if you do not pick up a victory tomorrow against the Wild, that percentage that we're talking about today at 9.4 becomes
under 5, I'd bet.
Yeah, down in the 2 or 3s. If there's any sort of favor you could get from Seattle and Utah. And this is the one scenario that I think you can kind of, you'll hear it and think, oh, geez, well, that doesn't sound impossible. If there's any chance that the Blues can lose back-to-back to end the season, the Flames could get in with a 3-1 record in their last four.
Yes.
It doesn't seem far-fetched, and yet you're going to need a lot of help. Don't get me wrong. I'm not taking out a second mortgage to bet on the Kraken and Utah Hockey Club, but there are a couple of slightly lit remaining pathways.
The situation as of now is that Calgary does not have a single iota of controlling their own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
However, that could change depending on what happens on Friday and Saturday. If the Flames win in regulation on Friday and the Blues lose on Saturday, then all of a sudden the Flames do have control of their own destiny again, because they could win out and the Blues, there's nothing they could do even if they win their last game. But right now, as we're speaking, the Flames need help. And that help would have to start with them doing their own business good on Friday night. Could have said that better, but
good business. That's the key.
They're doing their own business good. They're going to have to take care of their own stuff on Friday night. That is step number one, and then see where the chips may fall after that. And you know, I honestly don't know what to expect against the Wild, because you've got a Minnesota team that's coming off just an absolute pond hockey scrimmage at home against San Jose. I don't think that that game, as fun as it was to win, I don't think that game is going to sit well with John Hines, and I think that they're going to know the type of hockey they've got to play on the road. And then you've got a Flames team that'll know their season's on the line. And so a desperate Wild team with their first opportunity this season to clinch a playoff spot, a Flames team with their season hanging in the balance. I don't know. I honestly don't know what to expect. Are the Flames tight? Are the Wild tight?
Yeah.
I don't know. And that's why everything is shrouded in a whole bunch of ifs right now from a Flames standpoint. And I don't even know what to expect from them against the Wild.
And I think there will be some groans and eye rolls when you see the media availabilities tomorrow morning and you hear the Flames say, we can't look past tonight. We're only focused on Minnesota. We can't think about any other scenario. But it really is the position they're in, isn't it, buddy? Like, if you don't get 2 points, whatever number of playoff scenarios you could pin up on the wall, here's 20 different ways that this could play out. If you don't get the 2 points against Minnesota, forget it.
Yep. You start Wolf?
Yep.
Yep, me too.
Don't even hesitate.
It wouldn't even be a question for me. And if he doesn't have his best game, I'm not going to second guess it either. This is the time. Your season's on the line. There's one guy you're going to.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't even, wouldn't think twice about it. There's some other lineup decisions.
What could you even be talking about? There's not even a single question or anything that we talked about in the first hour of the program that could be relevant.
Why don't we go to break and then come back and discuss if they should go 10-8 tomorrow?
10 forwards? Weren't the Oilers going to go with 11-6 again before McDavid came back? Wasn't that what they were thinking
about?
Didn't
they wind up going with 5 defensemen last night?
Was it 5 defensemen?
I believe 5D because Jake Walman couldn't play. You know, one of the problems with everybody being within 55 cents of the salary cap is these sort of shorthanded situations down the stretch.
Remember in 09 when the Flames, I think, went 10 forwards and 4 defensemen or whatever it was? For a few games?
I have very vague memories. Dustin Boyd factored in that somehow.
So did John Nagrin, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's for a different time. Good times indeed. Steinberg, Wes, along with you this hour on Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Thursday edition of the program continues. Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson along with you. And now let's say hello to our goaltending expert. It's time to check in with Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com in Vancouver. Lots to get into from a goaltending standpoint. Kevin, appreciate the time as always. You can find him on Twitter at KevinIsInGoal. I guess I'll just start, Kev, by asking about your observations of Dustin Wolf's game on Wednesday. I know there were some who were a little frustrated to see a couple of those late goals go in on him as the Flames let a 3-1 lead late slip away in a 4-3 overtime loss. What did you make of Dustin Wolf's outing against the Ducks?
Yeah, Zegras' goal's a little tough. Looked like... You know, it's a fine line between anticipation, and you have to have that in the NHL, and sort of, you know, cheating's too harsh a word in that circumstance, but it looked like maybe that was a shot, and it was a hell of a shot, but a shot that maybe he wasn't fully expecting. I think it's one that he probably would want to be sitting on a little more and be a little more reactive to, but like I said, I think you also got to recognize the talent that Trevor Zegras has. And there was sort of a look-off element to it before he fired at top shelf. So that's the one, you know, that's the one that gets recorded as a low danger chance. Of course, they don't record whether the guy hits his spot or not. It's just where it comes from, the circumstances behind it. The Gauthier one's a mid. So, you know, hey, was it his best game? No. Anaheim, you know, had a couple expected and scored 4. Have I said? There's going to be ups and downs as part of this process, and it'll be better for going through it. Yeah, like, you know, let's be honest, this team is leaning pretty heavily on him and Dan Vladar as well and the starts he's had. And when I look at the overall numbers since the Four Nations break, Dustin Wolf remains top 10 in adjusted save percentage at plus 1.7%. So, you know, and the top seven guys on that list, as we discussed last week, are all guys who haven't played that much. Guys who, you know, are in backup roles, or in the case of Freddie Anderson, coming off an injury. So the only sort of regular number ones this season that are ahead of him statistically since the Four Nations break are Darcy Kuemper and Andre Vasilevskiy. He's slightly ahead of Filip Gustavsson. He's ahead of Connor Hellebuck. He's ahead of Jordan Binnington. So are there moments like that where you can be critical of certain save selections or the way he handles certain things? Yes, but I would suggest there's probably a lot of those for all the guys on the list. And when you look at the cumulative total, I'd take a top 10 performance. And again, amongst the starters, top three performance.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, here is, and just before we brought you on, Wes and I were just getting set for this big game against the Wild coming up on Friday night. And I just threw the question out, like, who you start Wolf in net against the Wild? And both of us, without hesitation, said, yes, the season's on the line on Friday. You start the guy that has been your meal ticket all year. That's where we are. And, you know, the game against Anaheim, the game against San Jose, the game against Vegas, the games that they've played here over the last couple of weeks, the Flames have been in pretty close to must-win territory and high-stakes territory the whole way. What, you know, knowing that they're are going to be and continue to be ups and downs for Dustin in his first NHL season. What's the value of him playing games with this on the line at this stage of the year?
It's immense, right? And something we've sort of talked about before too, where, you know, even amongst the warnings that there may be some hiccups here because he hasn't done this before, especially at this level where the games come so fast and furious, that he'll be better for it in the long run. And you can't replicate the pressure that comes with that situation. And it's not just about performance in terms of results. It's about, do you change your game? You know, I know goaltenders, Freddie Anderson for the first 5 or 6 years in the NHL, he told me this after starting to work with a sports psychologist that I know, you know, 5, 6 years into his career, admitted to me that he went into the playoffs every year thinking he needed to do more, be better, try harder than what he'd done during the regular season. Like, it's the playoffs.
Right.
You've got to be better. Well, you can't. Like, you don't get to dictate what happens to you as a goaltender. As a forward, maybe you throw an extra hit. Maybe you make sure you go to the net harder. Maybe you make sure there's an added physical element to your game. But as a goaltender, you can't change how you play. You have to go with what sort of got you there. And so the more pressure-packed moments that Dustin Wolf can be in, and trust the game that has gotten him here, that has gotten him in the Calder conversation, that has him top 10 since the Four Nations break statistically, and top 10, I think top 5 last I checked on the season as a whole, maybe even higher than that. Like, it's going to work, you know, in the playoffs and or under playoff pressure, and that you don't need to change your game because of big moments. And a lot of guys go through, you know, different sort of learning curves to get to that. And he's getting a taste of that in his first season, in a season where I don't think many people would have expected him to get that taste. And he's getting it in large part because of the goaltender he is. So this is all a win in my eyes moving forward. Development is rarely linear for goaltenders. Does it automatically mean that, you know, success will follow if he has success now? No, but I think he'll be better long-term for the experience, regardless of how it goes.
Kevin, as the Minnesota Wild come into Calgary for a massive, massive game tomorrow, what do we need to know about Minnesota's goaltending situation?
Well, where it gets really interesting is if Calgary can take care of business. Not just because I fully expected to be Filip Gustavsson on Friday. And, you know, I just ran through that list of guys in the top 15, and Gustavsson is there just a hair behind Dustin Wolf since the Four Nations. He's also in this conversation in terms of the season as a whole, you know, being one of the top goaltenders in the National Hockey League. Like, he's had that kind of year, real bounce back, real and really curious, because 2 years ago he was this guy, and then last year it fell off a cliff, and then this year he's right back to being this guy. But you know, Gustavsson is a massive part of what they've done in Minnesota. And what's interesting is the fall off when he's not playing. And so if the Wild can take care of business against what I would assume would be Gustafsson, I was just looking it up as you're talking. He's second in the NHL behind only Darcy Kemper in goals saved above expected. Wolf is fourth on the season as a whole. Hellebuck is in between the two of them. So that's the level we're talking about for both of these guys. So if you can solve him, you present the Minnesota Wild with a very difficult decision because the next night matters too. And the Canucks may be out of it, but Calgary might need some help from them. And it's second half of back-to-back, and you would assume that that's when you would see Marc-Andre Fleury. As a matter of fact, I've already got a note sort of from the bosses being like, hey, this might be Marc-Andre Fleury's final game in the NHL. Can we get a story on it? But if season is on the line, I'm not sure they can go to him right now. I don't know if they can go back to him. That is 19 goals in his last four starts. And he gets the win in overtime, and he gets the record, which is kind of fitting for his last home game that he ends up getting the record for most overtime wins. And he joked that, you know, he let up the seventh goal so that he'd get the win in overtime. But that is two of his last four starts have ended with a 6 and a 7. And so if you're the Wild, you may have a really tough choice to make if Calgary can force that game in Vancouver on Saturday to mean something. Do you go back to the legend, who seems to be struggling a little bit down the stretch here, perhaps with the attention and with the focus and with knowing that a first ballot Hall of Fame career is coming to an end this week? Or do you ride Gustafsson back to back? And as good as he's been this season, that's a big ask. Not just in terms of, because that's the thing about back-to-back. Sometimes the guy plays great in the second game. Sometimes you're even better in the second game. But the lingering effects of it, because they play again next week, and that game might matter, and then into the playoffs, man, it's not the back-to-backs. It's the week it takes you to recover from it that can be interesting. So if the Flames can take care of business against Gustafsson, they force the Wild to make a very difficult decision in the second half of back-to-backs. And if it is Fleury, then the Vancouver Canucks could do the Calgary Flames a big favor on Saturday night.
Kevin, we don't normally ask legacy questions with a week left in the regular season, but you mentioned Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't want to let our goalie guru off the phone without asking sort of about Marc-Andre's career in total. We know it's coming to an end. One of four goalies, in the NHL to play 1,000-plus games, second on the all-time wins list. What will Fleury's sort of legacy be when this season's done?
Like I said, first ballot Hall of Fame to me. I know there were ups and downs throughout this. I know maybe overall the save percentage, you know, isn't quite as high as, the last couple of guys to go in on a first ballot, Luongo and Lundqvist. But the career he's had, the durability, it is not just a physical thing. It's about being willing to evolve and change his game. I would actually argue that for the first number of years where there was inconsistency, and I shouldn't say first number of years, sort of that stretch where there was struggles in the playoffs. And I remember having this conversation with people in Pittsburgh at the time because they were ready to move on from him. And the question I asked at the time, and I kind of knew the answer, was this Marc-Andre Fleury struggling to meet the moment? Or was this Marc-Andre Fleury not having been given the foundation to allow him to meet the moment? And at that time, like, don't forget, like full-time goalie coaches weren't every team thing. And they had a very much an old school been there, done that goalie coach. And his technical game in Pittsburgh, frankly, put him in the position to fail. He was so over-aggressive. And when goalies struggle, they go one of two ways. They either retreat into their net and play deep, or they get so hyper-aggressive because they feel the closer they can be to the puck, the more likely it is to hit them. And that was Fleury when he struggled with Pittsburgh. And there was nobody there until they brought Mike Bales in as a goalie coach to sort of reestablish and set some positional foundations for Marc-Andre Fleury, including post play. So you would see in the playoffs, and I can picture them in my head right now because it was against the Islanders and it was a disappointing first round exit, and how many pucks were banked in off of him from below the goal line or behind the net on rebounds and scramble plays. It just looks ugly. And that's because he was putting himself in a position where he could have pucks banked in off him off the net because he played outside of his post so much. We've talked a lot about Wolf and sort of staying within the lines. Fleury was well outside those lines. And I think that lack of a positional staple was the reason for the struggle, and there was nobody in Pittsburgh to give it to him. They brought in Mike Bales. They reestablished it. They won two more Stanley Cups. And yes, I know Matt Murray closed them out, but Marc-Andre Fleury was a big part of both of them, especially the second one. And so to me, anytime you can get to this age as a goaltender, it's not just physical. It's a willingness to evolve your game tactically and technically. I'll give you one more example. Because he did change his game several times. You have to as the game evolves around you. When he was in Chicago, he started adding an overlap. So on dead angle plays, he would take the outside skate and put it outside the post. Because you can't butterfly with your skate on the post. It inevitably pushes you off the short side and causes exposure. So you take that skate outside the post and overlap into a butterfly. Told me that year that he learned it from watching Kevin Lankinen. So there's a guy who's on his way to a first ballot Hall of Fame career, and he's got this young kid from Finland, and he sees something in his game that he thinks might help him, and he asks him, and he learns about it, and he adds it to his game. And to me, that's how you get to where Marc-Andre Fleury is on the all-time list, games played, wins. And then at the end, to top it all off, he's also a hell of a person, really fun to be around, and the joy he brings to the game, the save selections, last goalie in the NHL that I know that plays last puck, the game they play in warmups where everybody tries to score. He's the only guy I know that still plays last puck when he's starting. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to love about this guy, and it should be a celebrated career.
Yeah, no doubt. I like that. It's a good. I like the last puck. I love watching that during warmup. You're right. It's always the backup. I didn't know that Fleury did that when he's starting. That's really cool. We're chatting with Kevin Woodley. He is our goaltending expert from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. And our last question, Kev, we'll focus on the other the In Goal Magazine is and the goaltending expertise is the bulk of our chats, but we do once in a while try to get your thoughts on the team you cover over at NHL.com outside of just the goaltending, and that's the Vancouver Canucks, who with Minnesota's crazy 8-7 win over San Jose officially eliminated the Canucks from playoff contention on Wednesday night. Just how do you sum up what turned out to be a really disappointing season in your market?
Well, I mean, I do think there are elements of it that were nobody's fault, right? Like injuries and there were things that were out of their control. But I do think there are other elements that everybody needs to take responsibility for. I think from management, despite warnings that it would be harder this year, but from management to coaching to players, there was a sense that they had taken a step and that everything would follow. And I'm not sure everybody worked hard enough. And I should be careful here with the coaches, because it's not that they didn't work hard enough, but I'm not sure everybody really dug in on the foundation of what this team was to be. I think they assumed, obviously wrongly, that they had baked in some of the elements to this group that allowed them to have success last season. And with that, I think of work ethic, defensive responsibility, the real staples that even after Demko went down and the scoring dried up down the stretch, still allowed them to be successful in the Stanley Cup playoffs with a third string goalie and Elias Pettersson basically disappearing. They get to game 7 in the second round. And those staples were based on five-man unit defensive play and the way they got back into their own zone as a group and came out of their own zone as a group. You started training camp with the coaching staff focused on creating things off the rush. Again, assuming the other parts were taken care of. You had players who, a big talking point in this market 2 years ago was everybody coming back to Vancouver like August 1st or out of the August long weekend, all working together, captain skates on the ice, so committed to all these things. That quietly didn't happen this past season. They didn't come back as early. They didn't all come back at the same time. They weren't all putting in that same level of effort. And I think, you know, there's a lot of that to go around. And up to the management side, full credit for getting Kevin Lankinen, because where would they be without him? But a lot of their moves in the offseason didn't pan out. And you can look at whether it's Danton Heinen, DeHarnay, the defenseman they got out of Edmonton, both deals that they had to pay to get off of. They knew what was going on with Pettersson and Miller, and didn't act until it was too late, and now one of them's gone. There's a lot of blame to go around for this season. There was also a lot of injuries, not just to Demko, but to other guys throughout the lineup, and that would have been hard to overcome, and it would be ignorant to overlook it, but I think it would also be arrogant to assume that that was the only reason, that there's no fault to go around at multiple levels with this group. And now it becomes interesting, what do you do? We've heard a lot of the talk about Rick Tocchet. I was asked the other day in this market if it's a dollars and cents thing and they just need to buck up. I don't think that's the case. I think this might be a personnel philosophy thing, and there are some moves that have been made even back to last year that I'm not sure would have been his first choice, and that I believe he probably let them know was not his first choice, and they made it anyways. And so really interesting to see. You've probably seen the reports that they do have another year team option for him next season.
Yep.
And reports that they intend to exercise it, whether he signs an extension or not. But he was a big part of what they did last year, and there seems to be question marks about his future. So there's a lot of uncertainty around here right now.
It's going to be an interesting final week of the season for you in Vancouver, Kev. In 1 week from today, we'll chat again. We'll be getting ready for Calgary's final regular season game in Los Angeles. We'll see if that game means anything or not. For now, enjoy the rest of your week, and I really appreciate the time today, as always, Kev. Thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, always great to be on with you guys. Thanks for making the time for me today.
And you as well. That is Kevin Woodley. He is our goaltending expert from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com out of Vancouver. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery as we start to wrap things up this hour on the program. Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson, our outstanding producers Cam Hughes and Shan Vergie, and that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.